Checkmate.
This is the Chestnut Checkers Podcast.
Checkmate.
Learn a new mindset to create wealth.
We need to be more independent thinkers, man.
Passive income.
Mathematics is precise.
A successful business.
Chess moves.
And money management strategies.
This is Chestnut Checkers.
I got a very special guest today. It's my little brother, Mario Pantoa, and he's and the reason I want to have him on is because we talk a lot about wealth building. We talk about, you know, building wealth through different ways. And one of the ways that people mostly talk about is building through business, stocks, investing. But a lot of times we don't talk about the way that most people build wealth is through a 9-to-5, right? So, well, how you doing today, Mario?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, we were just talking about, I know we talked a little bit about it before, we have conversation between me and you, but a lot of times people, like, especially online, you know, gurus and stuff online say, you need to quit your 9-to-5. You need to quit that 9-to-5, start a business. It's a lot of pressure. And I'm sure you've gotten it too, to start a business and quit your job, right? So, but you've been able to be very, very successful by moving up the corporate ladder. And I'm a person, you know, what I'm saying is that people know my background, is that I worked for AAA for many years. You know, AAA, I was a software engineer for AAA. And that was one of the best jobs I ever had. And that's one job that really set me up to be where I'm at today. Without that job, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I would have never made it, right? So I'm a person that says, look, man, you don't have to quit your job. If you want to, you can quit it. You get to a point, a certain place, you can quit it. But if you want to, you know, you want to keep that job, you like the security of the job, and you want to build wealth through investing, real estate, and other stuff, and side hustles, that's okay too, right? And a lot of people don't say that, right? And I think the reason is because, you know, some people that say these things were probably at one point unemployable themselves, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a different way to be able to create wealth. Just like you said, the way that I've done it is, I've been able to move around from different location to location. So I started, you know, by getting into college, going for business, going for my master's. And then I moved from Tennessee to Utah. Then that was my first, you know, big
position. So you say you moved around a lot, right? So how does that help you in your career path?
So by moving around, it just allows you to kind of widen your experience. So when I lived in Utah, it's completely different than when you live in Kentucky because the labor laws and everything are different. And then when you move to California, it's completely, totally different. So it just makes you more marketable, makes you have more tools in your toolbox.
So being more marketable, does that relate or convert over to salary?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're able to do different things, you're able to impact the organization in different ways. So it allows you to be more marketable and be able to ask for a higher salary.
All right. So let me ask you a question. I got a few questions here, right? So you said that you know, you get a higher salary, but you can get a higher salary, but it's also because of your value to the company, right? So that's the thing a lot of people don't understand is that, first of all, I want to backtrack a little bit. Mario is also an HR manager, right? He has tell me about your qualifications in HR. I forget them myself. I'm your brother, but I forget them because I'm so used to you. So,
yeah. So the way that I was able to get into HR is based off of when I was in college, I did an internship in human resources. Yeah. And while working on my internship, I went for a couple of HR certifications. I got a, you know, PHR, and I got a Society of Human Resources.
What's a PHR?
PHR is it's called a Professional in Human Resources from the Human Resources Certification Institute. And then I also have a certification from the Society of Human Resources Management, which I'm a certified professional through them. And then I was able to get, you know, an internship. And then I also, you know, went to college for business, which I took HR courses, which allowed me to get my first position in human resources.
So you think a lot of that perspective on HR, let's say, for example, has that helped you in your own career, like to understand how that process works and everything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because in my own career, I help people to place people in positions, because as an HR manager, you kind of serve as a recruiter too. So you manage the recruiting function. So in order to kind of model what other careers, because there's certain, you know, certifications that you're looking for people who work in software, you know, engineers, people who work in finance, you know, you have a CPA if you work in finance. So every profession, they have different types of certifications. You just have to figure out what these are and understand what the barriers to entries to get in there. And then you can successfully place people in positions. And that's what I do as HR.
All right. So since you got a lot of insight on that, right, there's a lot of people out there that's like, I get a lot of questions, right? Because I help people with tech careers, right? And I actually, it was a young lady that was a part of my mentorship, and she started out at she was making $60,000 in New York, right? Then over the next 2 years, I got her from $60,000 to $250,000. She started working at Amazon, right? And then we were able to do that because I told her she to quit her job to negotiate hard and do all those things, right? So to get that job up, get that salary up, right? Because that's really what the goal is. People want a high salary. People want to give value to the company, but they also want a high salary. That's what building wealth is, right? So there's nothing wrong with that. So let me ask you a few questions. Like, you talk about moving around, right? So does that increase, like, let's go back. Tell me the biggest thing you could possibly do to get your salary up fastest as possible.
So for me, it was and I guess if anybody you talk to who's a professional, they'll probably say the same thing. If you stay within the same organization, you're going to get small increases as you move up the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
But if you bounce around from one company to the next company, that makes you more marketable to other companies because you understand the way that different companies do business and how they operate. And you can bring those skills to the organization. And they're also able to give you top dollar as you move from one company to the next. But you know, from anybody that I've talked to, people, HR professionals, other industries, when you go from one company to the next and you're able to move around, you're able to relocate to different areas, you're able to ask for a higher dollar amount.
So the flexibility makes you more marketable, right?
Absolutely.
So if I can move, like, let's say, for example, I can move to Alaska right now. So I move back from Alaska down to California, and I move around. So it's going to keep my salary going up, right? And why is that again? You said it's because you learn skills in those companies, it makes you more marketable, right? So if you stay in one company, what happens if you just stay at the same company?
So there's a couple of things that you run into if you stay at the same company. For example, if I want my boss's job, my boss may be there to retirement. What if he's 40 years old? I'm going to have to wait until he retires over the next 20, 25 years.
That's what a lot of people do, though.
Before I'm able to move up. But if I open my range of what I'm looking at to other companies, I'm able to move in where the vacancies are, whether that's, you know, wherever I live in the city or outside of the state or wherever. You're able to move into those positions a lot faster.
But that's what people do, though. They stay at these jobs, man, and they're like, I'm just going to stay here. And then they get angry, right? Because they think they should have their boss's job. Right, and they get mad and bitter. But now tell me this. So let's say I'm a person, I'm coming up, I'm real good at what I do, right? So my manager is not as good as me, right? And I want his job. Now, what's the odds of me? What's a better thing for me to go somewhere else to get another job or me to try to take his job?
It's absolutely to go somewhere else and get another job. So what you should do is try to learn as much as you can from your boss, try to help him to relieve the responsibility. So if he did was to leave the company, you can move into his positions. But just trying to learn and understand and help to move the organization in the right direction. And the better way, again, it's to go to other companies and become, you know, the boss at a different organization.
But you can't take his job. Is that almost impossible? Why can I take his job?
Well, it really depends. You could potentially, if he's an incompetent manager.
How incompetent does he got to be before I take his job?
It depends on what that person's manager perceives as that person's performance is and what their expectations are and what they're able to allow.
Yeah, so let me ask you, like you talked about perception, man, is that perception is a big part of it, right? Sometimes it's a saying that says perception is a reality, right? So do you think that's true in the corporate world?
Yeah, absolutely. Perception is completely reality because it's very, very difficult to measure what success looks like in a lot of different positions. So it's really, how likable you are, how you connect with other people, how you're able to build relationships, all of those kind of things transition into being a successful performer. So absolutely, it's completely subjective. Your perception's reality because there's really no unifying, defined way how to measure performance in certain positions.
So, like, I come from software engineering, man. A lot of software engineers, you get mad because they feel like, hey, man, I can program better than this dude. Or he getting all the promotions because everybody like him. Now, people get mad behind that. You know what I'm saying? but is that valid to be mad, angry? Because, look, man, I'm a better person. I'm a better programmer, for example. I'm a better CPA. I'm a better lawyer than this dude over here, but somehow he keeps moving up because he's likable. He's going to lunch with people. He's going to sporting events with these people. So is that, you think that's fair or do you think that's just how it is?
Well, it's not fair if that's what's happening, but how do we know that that person's really a better performer? I mean, is it what makes that person a better performer versus this other person? Is that just that person's perspective, or is the other person's perspective is they're a better programmer? So again, it goes back to perspective, and the perspective of the person who's making the decisions is really where the perspective
that's
matters.
That's where it matters, then, right?
Yeah.
Right. So let's say we go back to that. Okay. So you said one of the tips to moving ahead in your career was moving around, the flexibility to be able to go wherever you're needed. Right. So that's that makes you be able to control, you know, your salary, your salary trajectory. Right. So the second thing, and we talked about this before, is negotiation. Right. And a lot of people they feel like, let's say I quote a job, right? And you're in HR. You offer me $50,000. You know, it's $50,000. You know, you say, well, I'm gonna offer you $50,000. Should I always negotiate, or should I not negotiate? Now, what would be the cases in which I would negotiate versus when I wouldn't? Let's start over. I apply to a job, right? So I apply to this job. I get, you know, we go through the interviews. They say, look, we give you an offer letter. They give you an offer letter. Say, look, this is what your pay is. Should I always negotiate?
Well, the worst that could happen is they say no, right? But you should come in and have a valid reason as to why you're wanting to negotiate. I wouldn't say always negotiate, but you should look at, you know, what value are you bringing? What is it going to take for you to get there financially from where you're coming from? And then make the decision on if they can get to where you want to go, then you make the decision on if you want to change companies or not.
So if I negotiate, it's not like they're going to tell me I'm dumb. They're going to retract the offer letter, right? Does that ever happen?
Well, it's very rare that it happens, but it can happen. There's throughout my career, I've been in HR over 10 years, and it's only happened one time.
And why did that happen?
It was just based off of the person who was making the decision. They decided that they wanted to pull their offer off of the table.
Like, was it anger that did it? Like,
no.
Like, how dare this dude ask for more money?
It was just a matter of, like, frustration of wanting to just move on from that candidate to move along to the next candidate.
It was another candidate. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, you almost got to know how in demand you are. Now, was that an in-demand job, a real in-demand job?
The job was in demand based off of where it was located. The job was in Kentucky. Yeah. So there wasn't a lot of companies that offered that type of position in that area that paid that well. So there was a lot of people who did that type of work, but there wasn't a lot of companies that offered that type of position. So that's where that job was a little bit, you know, more higher in demand than it would be if everybody was looking on a national scale.
All right, so we got back to what we're saying is that the way we increase our salary, build wealth through a job, is first be flexible, be able to move around, be able to, you know, to take advantage of geographic locations, take advantage of different company structures, and move away. You can move up quickly like that. Now, how long should you stay at a job?
So generally, they'll say you should stay there from 2 to 3 years because depending on, you know, the level of the organization that you're at, you know, when you're first learning a position, let's say you're an intern, apprentice type position, maybe a year or so, you understand, you move on. But when you get into leadership roles, you want to stay in the organization because, you know, in order to change a culture, they say it normally takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years. And that's what you're ultimately doing in the department that you're in. So the first year, you know, you're just trying to find out where the restrooms are. You're trying to find this very basic fundamental stuff and understand the company's culture. The second year is where you really start gaining ground. And then the third year is where you can start to put in processes that can be sustainable even after you leave the organization. So anywhere from 3 to 5 years in leadership positions, but the more junior positions, maybe 2 to 3 years. And then, you know, very entry level positions, maybe 1 to 2.
All right. So far we got to, if you want to increase your salary, you can move around. Be able to be flexible with not only your geographic location, right? That's very important. Two is that you need to negotiate, right? In most cases, you should negotiate your salary. So you should only, in three, we should stay at a job roughly, you know, on average 2 to 3 years, depending on a little bit more for leadership, a little bit less for entry level. Now, is there anything else that could possibly move your, now, what about gaining new skills? What about going back to school? Now, let's say I'm 40 years old. I'm 40, right? So let's say if I just want to say, look, I'm gonna go and get my master's degree. Now, how much impact would that have on a career, you think? I know you got your master's, but you got it early. But I'm saying once you're later on in your career, like I'm 40, 45, and I say, hey, man, I'm gonna go ahead and get my master's. Now, is that, in your experience, was that a big career, what to people you've seen, is that a big career boost after they get it that late?
So not really a big career boost. It does make you more credible based off of, you know, the things that you're talking about, the field that you're in. But it doesn't necessarily, you know, make you more marketable within the company that you are. A lot of times after you've been in that organization, what's going to make you marketable is the relationships, your performance, what you've had with the people. So they say there's an acronym that goes around, you know, different corporations called PI, performance, impact, exposure. Those are really the things that are going to help you to be able to advance and jump on the corporate ladder.
So if I'm working at a company, and I go get a master's. That's what a lot of people get confused about. Now they get angry with. They'll be working at a company that said, "Look, man, I'm gonna go get my master's. I'm move up." They go get that master's, then they realize the company still ain't offering them stuff. They still not moving up. Is it because maybe the company sees them a certain way already, and that's it? So why does that happen so often? Like I said, if I work for a company, I go out and get my degree, and nothing changes for me.
So during the time that you're taking going out to get the degree. I would recommend spending that same time working for the company that you have, developing your skills. One of the things that I wish I would have done earlier on is being bilingual. You know, if I was an HR manager and I was able to speak Spanish, that would not only make me more valuable to my company, but it would also make me, you know, more marketable to other organizations. So that's, you know, something that, you know, can really translate over into being able to be more valuable in a position, not necessarily going to go get a, you know, a master's degree in human resources at this point.
And the funny thing about that is that when I was in college, I actually told you that you needed to learn Spanish, and you didn't agree with me. So, so I was right, right? So who listened?
So at that time, I really wanted to focus on getting out of college debt free. So I don't know, that was really my primary focus. So, and I was successful there. So. That's why I didn't take that. But like looking back, maybe I could have done things a little bit differently where I could have worked that in and being able to become bilingual. But that was something that maybe I should have listened to it.
Yeah. See, who listened? He should have listened. See, but I did tell him that though. All right. So we got back to the thing is that you said you think in your career, bilingual would be a big help, right? Especially with so many, you know, the demographics of the United States changing so fast. So anything else that you think did you like? Yeah, we got a question from Chris over here. What's the question, Chris? All right, so Chris has a question, and what he wanted me to ask is that he said that traditionally, you know, we've been taught that you're supposed to stay at one job for a long period of time, right? So he was concerned is like if I got all these jobs every year, 2 years, would that look bad to potential employers?
Well, it could look bad. So, like, for example, I could kind of tell you a little bit about what I've done. So I've, in the last 13 years, I've actually only worked for two companies, but I've moved around within those companies. I moved to three different locations within Kroger and then also within Nestle. So if you're advancing and you're able to speak to why you're moving from one location to the next location or moving from one job to the next, you have to have a very good reason as to why you're moving. As to put, you know, you say I've this was a better opportunity, allowed me to gain this particular skill set. You know, if you say, you know, I went here for financial reasons, people, they'll understand it because who doesn't want more money, right? So you have to be able to explain why you're moving from one job to the next. And if you're able to do that, employers, they should be fine. But if you're talking about, you know, you're jumping ship every year within a position, that's totally different.
With different jobs, right?
With different jobs. Let's say, you know, I start off as a software engineer for a year, then you move to HR for a year, and then you move into production. Yeah, absolutely. That's something that would be very, very difficult to explain. And then people, you know, kind of look at you, you know, negatively in that instance. But if you have a, you know, very process-oriented way that you move from one position to the next, most employers, they're gonna understand why, and they'll be able to consider you for a position.
Let me ask the question again. So Chris has a question he wants me to ask. So with the rise of influencers in the last 4 or 5 years, right, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people that are influencers or content creators that are creating content and creating, you know, a lot of things on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or whatever. And these people actually have careers and they work, especially with LinkedIn. It's people that work careers and have a lot of, you know, that are very active on that. Do you guys take that into account when you look at like let's say if somebody was very, very active on LinkedIn with a lot of followers, writing articles, would that be a plus or a negative?
You know, that's a very interesting question because, with large corporations, a lot of the things that starting to become more trendy and more popular, With larger corporations, just because they're so big, there's so many people involved in it, it takes a long time for them to be able to start to adapt to the new ways of doing things. So you get your executive board and your senior leaders in the organization. They're a lot older, so they're not really hip to what the new trends are and the new things are. So the company that I work for now, we're actually just starting now to get into that stuff. We actually had a meeting a couple of weeks ago to talk about how can we start working with influencers like, you know, Dwayne Johnson. And they're actually brought up, I don't remember the name of it. It was a dog that's an influencer on somebody's page to kind of pull that person in. To pull the dog in to help us to market some of our products. But definitely now, right now, the influencers being such a big thing and so hot, our company is starting to look at that and trying to see how we can leverage that to build our brand and start bringing in some of those people as consultants for our organization.
Okay, so let's say somebody was like, let's say right now, like I got a pretty big following relatively. So let's say right now, like you were going to hire a software engineer, right? And I said, man, I don't want to do all the Instagram stuff no more. I'm going to go back to being a software engineer, full time. So I gave you my resume and you found my profile and stuff. Would that be a negative or a plus for you to hire me?
Well, again, for me, it wouldn't be a negative. But the person that's going after the position that you're the hiring person, they'll go through your profile and it just gives them more things to kind of scrutinize on your page. So it really just depends on what the perspective of that person is. So they'll go through and they'll look at all of the different things on your page. That's why, you know, in certain instances, people are very they're very selective about the stuff that they put online. It just gives them more of a look into your life and kind of built their own perspective of what they believe that is.
All right. So let's go. Let's do a little recap, and I want to ask you a few more questions. So to move ahead in your career, to get that salary that you want, to increase your salary the fastest way. The first thing we said was that flexibility and geographic location. You got to have the ability to move around, the willingness to move around, right? The second was to negotiate, right? Whenever you get that offer, you negotiate it, most cases. Third, we said, is that you move around jobs. You know, you want to keep a job 2 to 3 years. You do it, sometime it could be more for leadership, less for entry level. And you said number four was the fourth one. I forgot. I think I forgot what was the fourth one. I think it was only three though.
Yeah,
it was only three. My bad. So I want to, with that being said, I want to ask some more questions, right? How much Bitcoin do you got?
I don't have any Bitcoin. Yeah, but I do invest in Mara.
You Mara and what else? You got in Riot?
I was doing Riot. And then I noticed that they were doing a lot of, share offerings, so it started to impact the price of the stock. So I just started to just solely focus on Mara.
Are you still in Mara?
Actually, I just got out of it last week.
Are you going back in then?
I am going to go back in.
Walk us through the logic of why you're going back in.
So I think long term, Mara, you know, obviously it follows the pattern of how Bitcoin goes up, and it's I have a lot of confidence in Bitcoin, so I think, you know, it's almost a can't lose for me. So, even if, and I'm diversified, so I don't go in with all of my money or anything. Even if it was to drop for 2 or 3 years, I would just leave it in there, wait 2 or 3 years for it to recover, and I'd be fine. But I just have a lot of confidence in what it's going to do long term.
All right. So what was your biggest investment ever? Weren't you in Boeing last year?
Yeah, I was in Boeing last year for a while. When the market went down, I got Boeing for about $99 a share. And then I ended up selling it at like $220 a share. When the market went down, I just, spent as much money as I could on different things because I felt like the recovery was, underway.
All right. That sounds good, man. I appreciate having you. Appreciate you having me here in Dallas. And I hope and I appreciate all of your helpful advice. Thanks again, Mario.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining today's podcast. I really appreciate your support. If you want more wealth building information, education, and tips in stock market, crypto, and other assets such as real estate, follow me on Instagram and also on YouTube. It's the same name, Tall Guy Tycoon. That's TallGuyTycoon. The link is also in the description. Also, you can support this podcast by donations. That link is also in the description. I hope each and every one of you has a great week. And again, thanks for listening.